Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. My name is David Reed and this is Marek Larwood. Hello, Marek.
Hello, David.
Are you all right there?
Not really, no.
Oh, why not?
Because moments before this podcast started, your brother, John Reed.
That's right, yes.
Difficult customer.
Of the Camden Kongs fame.
Of the Camden Kong football team. He always said he was going for a drink after done the podcast and I tried to invite myself for along.
You did?
And with his friend Tommy, alleged friend called Tommy, even though there's no one called Tommy in our generation.
No, everyone called Tommy died in the war, didn't they?
Or blind pinball players.
That's right.
Anyway, he said I couldn't come for a drink, and then said I looked like I might be an alcoholic.
Just looked like.
That's really bad, though.
I think that is worse.
Alcoholics
almost.
Have got red faces. I don't even look like an alcoholic.
I don't think you do at all.
Why don't you say? Matt doesn't look like an alcoholic. Why are you leaving till now?
You could defend yourself, can't you? I think it would have been quite patronising for me to go, whoa there, John. Marek is a upstanding gentleman and as sober as they come. Thank you very much.
I'm not completely sober. And this sounds like I am an alcoholic. I like a glass of red wine on maybe two or three times a week.
Sure.
Twice a week.
Yeah. No, well, I didn't think it was such a laughable accusation. I thought it didn't need defending.
But surely, sometimes, in life in general, by not saying anything, we're agreeing with...
We're tacitly agreeing with what is being said. Well, maybe.
That's what I felt.
The bad guys win when the good guys do nothing.
A difficult start to the podcast.
A difficult start. I was in Edinburgh recently for the Edinburgh Festival.
Oh, well done.
And... I saw Inside Out, which we've talked about before.
Oh, what did you think of it?
I enjoyed it. I thought it was great. Very clever.
Conceptually
beautiful.
Yeah.
They have a problem, I think. And I've wrapped my brains on this. And this is the latest Pixar, if you're not in the know, about emotions being anthropomorphised in the brain of a young girl called Riley.
What does anthropomorphised mean?
Given human traits, characteristics.
I'm going to anthropomorphise mine.
You got too excited there. The words didn't come out of your mouth.
Anthropomorphise. I'm just rubbish now. Okay. All I was going to say is I want to anthropomorphise my dick, but now it just sounds quite resigned.
I don't know what it means. I think the problem they have in that film is that... because their lead characters are anthropomorphized emotions, you've got joy and sadness being the main ones, they are one-dimensional characters. And I think that is where it falls down from and prevents it being a classic. Joy never really deviates from joy at all. It's not just her principal characteristic, it's almost her only characteristic, and sadness is the same. And so they're not Buzz and Woody.
Yeah.
You know, they're not characters who are quite interesting and diverse and can react to things in different ways.
That's
they become
point.
One note, and therefore we care slightly less about what happens to them in their adventure. And I think that's the I think they've written themselves into a corner with their frankly wonderful concept.
Arseholes. Yeah. You're right though, it's like those people who are nice the whole time, I never like them.
Mm. Yeah, just if they just hit, you know, the idea, the very idea that the concept of a kid's film is asking the question, what is sadness for? It's a brilliant idea for a kid's film, you know, rather than imagine if cars could talk. You know, it's a beautiful concept, and it's largely brilliantly done. I just think they slightly suffer from this one little flaw in it, that we can't really get to know these characters very well. That it becomes quite superficial, for all that it is quite an in-depth idea.
Do you think Pixar should do a sex education film?
I don't. No, I don't think that should happen.
Okay. Well,
what, called genitals or something, where it's, what do the genitals get up to when we're asleep?
I just think that'd be a good way of doing it to save a lot of birds and the bees film.
Mm. Oh, okay, so it's actually about birds and bees.
Well, no, it could be about, but it's a way that, it's a sex education film. If they did that, that would, it would be a slow running hit for years and years and years.
As you, yeah. Well, I don't think America's ready for that.
I'm ready.
You're ready. So there's a market of one right there.
Brother John would definitely watch it.
Oh, he definitely would. But he's drinking with his friend Tommy.
He's gone upstairs to play on the computer.
He has.
And we all know what that means in this modern age.
You think he's drinking alone?
No.
Oh, right. No.
I've been quite sordid this episode.
You have been. I think you've been quite bruised by John's hurtful comment. In Edinburgh, Festival as well, I went to my favourite cinema in Edinburgh, the Cameo.
Yes.
Went there for a glass of wine. Take it back to How You Like a Glass of Wine. It's a lovely place. Lovely place. Independent cinema that's still thriving, which is nice.
We filmed a scene for an Impractical Jokers show I did there, which didn't make the actual final thing.
Oh, that's a shame.
Another point of the story, which is of no interest to anyone.
Fantastic.
But what is of interest is that you went and saw some of a film.
I did. Trainwreck, starring Amy Schumer. Written by and starring Amy Schumer, I'm pretty sure.
Everyone's banging on about Amy Schumer, though, like,
yes.
She's the new Messiah.
Have you seen any of her stuff?
I've seen a bit online. I think they're just over. She's just being overhyped, like she's just this comedy god. And no one's perfect, are they?
No, I mean, but that's hardly her fault. I mean, that'll just be the money men swarming around her, really. I do like her stuff. I like her sketches that I've seen online. And I think what she's got, which is too often ignored these days in comedy, is she's got her own voice, her own attitudes to stuff. And that is what her comedy is about. It's why Louis C.K. is so popular, because he's exactly the same. He's got opinions that aren't just what you'll hear every day when you're talking to people at the office. It's not the style of comedy we have here, specifically in stand-up these days, where audiences seem to want their own opinions just voiced back to them by people doing gags.
Why is cheese so expensive?
Yeah, exactly. You know, whereas she's more interesting than that. And of course, for her show, she'll have a team of writers like everybody does in the US, but she has got her own voice. And often when you get successful TV comics in the States, they get given a movie vehicle and it instantly becomes pap, because there's sort of the lure of, you know, the lure, I should say, with a U. Of money and just, you know.
Tell me about it.
I know, God. I keep having to turn them down. But Trainwreck is her film. Absolutely. And it's got her own voice and she's portraying a female character you won't have seen before in a movie.
So she's someone who's got problems going on dates or something, right?
She just is. She likes sex. She doesn't like being tied down in a relationship with people. And she just sort of she's who she is, and it's not portrayed as necessarily a bad thing. She's a bit of a mess, but she's just living her life how she sees she wants to live.
Is she like an alcoholic?
No, not at all. She's not that kind of train wreck.
So if someone said Amy Schumer looks like an alcoholic, you would say...
You are like the English Amy Schumer, actually, I think. I can see a lot of her in you.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. Her sister is played by Brie Larson, who is sort of her little sister, and she's very sort of trad and married with kids and is very sort of normal. and this sort of the
comparison between. Know Brie Larson?
Brie Larson played Abed's girlfriend in Community briefly. If you ever watched Community, she's done other stuff. She's very, I think she's sort of up and coming, as they say. But anyway, Bill Hader is the other guy who she has to write an article about. She works for a magazine, the editor of which is Tilda Swinton, and she has to write about this sports physiotherapist who's a big guy. He's suddenly like the physiotherapist to the biggest basketball stars or whatever, and so she has to interview him, and it's a sort of...
Oh, LeBron James in it?
Yeah, he's very funny in it, actually. He's very good.
Have you seen him play basketball?
No, I haven't. I haven't. So, to me, he was just a funny actor.
Really?
But yeah, he was great. He was really, really good in it. But no, it's a genuinely funny film. With it's got its own voice, and it's not just another one of these bloody rom-coms. It's more interesting than that, yeah.
And Tilda Swinton's in it as well, then.
She's playing a British, you know, magazine editor who's basically entirely amoral and selfish and, you know, one of these media characters who is always pushing her employees to do terrible things with their lives in the name of journalism and, you know, write about it.
Is it a date film?
It depends. Your date would have to sort of have a bit of a sense of humour. I think it's a bit gross. There's lots of sex stuff in it. Like, the WWE wrestler John Cena is in it as Amy's boyfriend at the beginning. And there's some really good stuff where she's asking him to do dirty talk. And he says he's not good
John
at it.
John Cena, the really, really skinny guy.
No, huge. He's absolutely huge.
I'm thinking of someone else.
Just thinking of Michael Cera.
Yeah.
He's a very different man. Very different.
In my head, I had Michael Cera in WWF. I mean, surely that's a miscast.
No, he's absolutely huge, John Cena. But it's a great scene early on where she's asking him to do dirty talk while they're in bed together, and he just ends up just repeating sort of weightlifting lines and stuff about protein. He can't do it. It's really good. But he's very good in it. He's very funny. But no, it's worth seeing. If you like Amy Schumer's stuff, then see it. Like, and if you don't know her stuff, then it's interesting. It's good. It's somebody making their own thing.
How many Davies do you give it?
Probably, I think I give it 7.
A reasonable score.
Reasonable score. It's got a good Rotten Tomatoes rating. People seem to have liked it, by and large.
Well, go and see it then if you
go
like.
Go and see Trainwreck, why
if
not?
If you like films, go and see it.
If you like films. It's actually fairly rare that a comedy is funny when it's in the cinema, I think. They're more often misses than hits.
Well, it's funny for 20 minutes and it goes.
Yeah, exactly.
I tell you what, though.
What's that?
What time do you think it is now?
What time do I think it is?
Yeah, in terms of the show.
Is it sausage time?
No.
Oh, is it letters time?
Yes,
it's
please.
Letters time. Who's been writing into us, and what on earth do they want, and why won't they leave us alone?
Natalie Cook has written in.
Okay,
we're Natalie. Not saying Natalie Cook. Natalie H. Cook.
Good. It's my favourite of the Natalie Cooks.
Should I read it?
Yeah.
There's no voice specified. Oh, here we go. Dear David American Buddy, given the nature of my question, perhaps accent should be Star Wars based, Yoda, Leia, or even Chewbacca, if you think you can make it comprehensible,
well,
whatever you
that
fancy.
That would be impossible. So, what
Chewbacca.
I don't know how you do a Princess Leia impersonation.
Well, Chewbacca would just be like an alcoholic, wouldn't it?
Okay. Can you do Chewbacca?
I'm going to do Chewbacca, cross between the sort of person from Charlie Says, the cat from Charlie Says.
Okay, is that Chewbacca?
I'm going to be... Is it gonna,
no,
I'm
Chewbacca's gonna, young nephew.
I'm going to do Henry's cat.
Okay.
Henry's cat, which is probably something related to... Do you remember Henry's cat, the cartoon?
I do remember Henry's cat.
I've never seen Star... That was on that Henry's cat. No. Well, Henry's cat.
Henry's cat is basically Ken Campbell.
Oh, well, I'm going to do it as Henry's cat. I've never seen Star Wars... Just quite a lot of clips and parodies. It just seems to have passed me by due to my age.
parents' lack of interest, not caring all that much. And giving that secret cinema or doing Empire Strikes Back, and a new one is out this year, I thought there may be a cinema, brackets ideally in London, planning to show the rest of them. Very well aware that the second lot I've considered to be a bit shit, or at least the very first one. Have any of you or any listeners got any idea if anywhere in or near London is showing the first Star Wars film? Help me, Film Fandango. You're my only hope. Well, not only hope. I'll probably get just a DVD or something. There isn't anything. If there isn't anything. Also, despite my evident lack of film knowledge, I think I might have an IMDb score of 1. I love listening to the podcast. Oh, so please do keep watching the films. Oh, thanks for that. Where would you go? I will just wait, because they're going to be. There'll be some. They always do that thing, don't they?
Pre-Star Wars hype for the new ones. The number 7's coming out this Christmas has been preposterous in the number of companies they have got to tie in and do Star Wars stuff. Have you seen? I think it's Rimmel have released Star Wars makeup. That's how stupid it's all got. Yeah, it's and they've announced that Disneyland is going to have an enormous Star Wars world you can go and visit as well. And it's just been this endless, just like, Star Warsification of all commercial property. But, you know, which is fine. I am in sort of, I'm hoping they make a good film out of it. But I imagine they'll re-release them in the cinemas beforehand or get...
somewhere
the
like Prince Charles
I would keep an eye on their website to have a look. The Prince Charles would be exactly the sort of place to show Star
They've
Wars.
Done stuff before where they show the Lord of the Rings, the whole thing, haven't they?
Yeah, but yeah, one sitting kind of thing.
They'll do... I guarantee the Prince Charles, I would put money on them doing a whole Star Wars sitting.
But whether they would show the prequels or
I don't,
not...
Who wants to watch that?
No
shit.
One wants to watch those. They're terrible film. Yeah, I half hope that they go back and remake them, but I know they won't.
Yeah, they should do. Shouldn't
but
they?
Write different stories, you know? Just write a different origin for those things.
It is an email.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Are you excited by Star Wars, just to go on this for a bit?
I'm not a big Star Wars fan, but it does... I've never been a big Star Wars fan, but I'm a big J.J. Abrams fan.
Did it miss... I was a huge Star Wars fan, and I have to admit, as a kid, and I have to admit, it was mostly through the toys, because I loved the toys.
All the figures. I remember going to see Return of the Jedi. I think Empire Strikes Back, one of the first films I'd seen. I've got an old scrapbook with an Empire Strikes Back lollipop cover in it, which is probably worth £1 million. But, and the figures are great, going to Tesco's and then looking. The best idea ever. Having on the back of the Star Wars figures all the pictures of all the ones you could get. Well, about 100. So
incredible.
You sit there and look at them.
I had so many of them as well, but I would get them from jumble sales and stuff. I couldn't afford them, you know.
Might happen to all my Star Wars figures. You've probably got mine.
Probably have. It's I have a paperback comic book by Marvel. So it's got Spider-Man on the spine of the whole of Empire Strikes Back as a comic.
Wow.
That's probably worth something.
I've got some. You're supposed to write your, on the, like in Woody, don't you? You put your initials on the feet, the Star Wars for yours.
Is that right?
That's the problem, that you could...
Well, they had holes in their feet, though, didn't they, to stand on things.
But but everyone only had one Stormtrooper.
I had one Stormtrooper.
And one Snow One.
One Snow One and 4 Lando Calrissians. Weird, huh?
Why not?
Yeah, in different clothes, obviously. I absolutely love them. So I dare believe that this is going to be good, and I am looking forward to it, because it's just so much part of my upbringing, you know, Star Wars. And I thought, you know, I was as appalled as everybody else when the prequels came out and they weren't very good, and, you know, felt all of those emotions of, oh, you've broken my childhood, you know, Star Wars was mine, it's not about Jar Jar Binks. And, of course, then you think back and you go, it wasn't mine, it came out in 77, long before I was born. You know, my generation was the generation that the Ewoks was created for. So for the previous generation, my dad's generation or whoever... who thought that the Ewoks were dumbing down the series. That was for my lot, who were tiny kids and absolutely loved the Ewoks. My generation were the guys who watched it on television when it came out at Christmas, 82. I'm the generation's the part of the problem, I suppose.
I'm the Empire Strikes Back generation.
That's it, you're the grumpy one. The alcoholic one. Who's this and what do they want?
She's Jack Cooper.
What accent does he want?
He doesn't say.
Okay. Jack Cooper? He's a Cooper, makes barrels.
Okay, go for it.
Right, hi team. A few years ago, I backed a documentary on Kickstarter called The Death of Superman Lives. But Superman Lives. But I think it's Superman. About the aborted Tim Burton / Nicolas Cage Superman film. This week I received my digital copy and a double Blu-ray / DVD pack has been posted. I was going to send you the DVD as I won't ever use it, but figured I might as well give you a download to my digital copy via Google Drive. Well, thanks very much. Anyway, I've seen the film. I bought it because I'm a comic book nerd, but it ended up appealing to me more as a documentary fan. It's essentially a film about Hollywood, development hell, and people who definitely are/were on cocaine. I have some criticisms about the documentary, but won't get bogged down in the negatives. Ultimately, I'd be very surprised if you didn't find this documentary interesting. It's worth it alone for the interviews, the insane producer John Peters, and the behind-the-scenes footage of Nicolas Cage. Easily a 7-Jack film. Keep watching the films. Jack Cooper.
Thanks for sending that to us. We haven't got around to watch it yet, but we will.
We will. It sounds fascinating. It's this odd parallel universe where Tim Burton possibly would have got to make all of DC's comic book hero movies because Batman was so successful, and then he started to lose them with Batman Returns because it got really dark. Black stuff just starts oozing out of Danny DeVito's face, and it suddenly feels like it's not for kids anymore. And they ended up getting nervous and pulling the plug on Superman. But Nicolas Cage as Superman is such an odd choice.
I mean, it'd be great.
Have you seen I've seen photos of him trying on the suit, and it looks almost neon, and he's got shoulder-length sort of Michael Ball hair. And it's weird. Burton was going to emphasise, really embrace the fact he was an alien, and make him as alien as possible, really.
We should watch that thing then.
We should, we should. It'd be interesting. Thanks for that, Jack.
Time for one more?
Sure.
We've got a question for the show from Darren Rogers. He's not giving in. What should I do it as?
Do it as sort of a jaunty pirate.
Oi. Oh.
No?
No.
Okay. How about as an angry chef?
Potato.
A potato, okay.
Hi all. I really enjoy your Ace and Peace and the Hidden Gems on Netflix. I wondered if you could do one on Film 4. As a free-to-air channel, it will be more readily available to everyone than Netflix and has a good mix of foreign films, old classics and great films that listeners may not have heard of before. For instance, I recently watched Eggland, which is a vampire film but narrated and described from the viewpoint of a teenage boy and was really well done. I thought I'd seen every vampire film out there, so it was refreshing to find something new. I heartily recommend it and give it 8 Darrens. Keep watching the films.
Film 4. What I do is I just...
It's a good idea.
It changed quite a lot.
There's lots of stuff on there.
They do quite good with Japanese animations, actually.
Oh, really? I've not seen a lot of Japanese animation. There's not a lot of good things coming up, though. Don't Look Now I've not seen, though. That's on
Very
Sunday.
Good.
That's Sunday the 23rd.
One of the scariest final scenes ever.
There's a lot of crap. Dark Crystal's on Monday.
I've taped that off Film 4. Watch the top. Just set your recorder and get everything on Film 4. And it's never rubbish. It's always quite interesting what they've got on.
Well, isn't it? Shutter Island's on there.
Ruby Sparks is on. But by the time that'll be finished, by the time this comes out. So that's of no... That's of no help to you.
Yeah, I've looked through for what's up there that we can see. Rat Race, I've heard, is absolutely terrible. Underworld Awakening. I have not watched the Underworld.
See, this is what the Night and Day is, seems to be always on there. Every time I go and look on there, I watched the first 10 minutes of it. I can't be arsed with that.
Which one's Night and Day?
It's Cameron Diaz. And
Tom Cruise. Yes.
Spirited Away, that's the Japanese people like. Twilight seems to be, yeah, and Salt's the other one. Night and Day and Salt are always on film four.
I've not seen Salt.
I've watched about 10 minutes
Night
of both
and Day's fine. It's quite fun. You have to sort of like Tom Cruise and Cameron Diaz, I suppose.
Panic Room, Jodie Foster, I've not seen it. It's supposed to be quite good. That's coming up on film
it's
four.
It's alright. The problem with Panic Room is its villains aren't scary. Its villains are Jared Leto and Forrest Whitaker, and they're both sort of adorable.
I tell you what though, Wednesday the 19th of August,
yeah,
that's tomorrow, so you're going to miss it. Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Well, I was looking from when we're going to upload.
Yeah, so this is so we're recording it on a Tuesday, so I've completely ruined it.
Yeah.
Shutter Island, did you mention that?
Yeah, I hate that film, it's rubbish.
I think it's very good.
To you?
Yeah.
Danielle Ward, one time co-host of this podcast, I promise you, because I was there, guessed the twist 14 seconds into the film Shutter Island.
Wow.
Yeah.
Black Swan's coming up, if you like that.
Yeah, again, not great. It's fine.
Okay. Well, there we go. Pretty film. Angel Heart. This is a very good vampire.
Is it? I've not seen it.
Very
Angel
good
Heart.
Film.
What day is that on?
It is on Monday, 24th of August at 1:40 a.m, which is a very... Robert De Niro,
it's very
Mickey
early.
Rourke,
have to
it.
Record it.
So set your record button for that if you want to hear it, watch a quite odd
vampire film.
Yeah,
Angel Hearts doesn't sound like a vampire film, does it?
It's sort of a weird. I watched. It's just odd. It's got a thingy from the Cosby Show in it.
Bill Cosby.
No, his daughter. One of his, the oldest daughter.
Oh, okay.
I mean, we're going quite off topic here.
We are. Have you seen Dragonheart? Speaking of the other heart films. Have you ever seen Dragonheart?
The bloke, what's his name in it?
Dennis Quaid.
Yeah, I have seen that.
Yeah, yeah. With Sean Connery as a dragon.
It's
and Pete
right,
Popplesweight as a sort of bard. It's quite good,
I remember. Remember it being all right.
Fun, you know, fun.
All right then. Well, I tell you what.
What?
I haven't been to cinema this week.
Get out.
Yes. I tell you why.
Why?
Because I got asked to do one of these Talking Heads programmes. You know the programmes that no one ever watches?
Yeah. Filler.
Yeah, so I'll be the person that people go, when I come on screen, it'll say Matt Lloyd, it might not even say comedian, it might say bald man, and people from around the country will go, who?
Yeah.
What?
It'll just...
Who is it? I hate him.
Yeah. So what were you talking about? Were you doing that thing where they show you a YouTube clip, and then you talk about it immediately afterwards as if you remember it well from the time it was originally on?
No. Well, this is what happened.
Right.
I'm doing a thing about disaster. It's a disaster film countdown.
Yes.
And I got sent a list before this weekend of disaster films.
That's fun.
And I thought, I'd seen a lot of them on there. Excuse me. But there were a few really obscure ones I hadn't seen. So I thought I would make an effort to watch a lot of disaster films over the weekend.
Yes.
Which might explain why I'm in a bad mood. Because you should never watch more than two disaster films in a row.
I mean, that would be just horrific.
Well, I've done it.
Oh, Merrick.
Yeah, it was a disaster of a weekend, I tell you.
Well, that'll happen.
And there were films, sorry, excuse me, on there I'd not heard of before.
Yeah.
So I watched those, and I only to get a new list the day before we're going to film it, where all the films I've watched aren't on there. It's all the normal films.
That's good of them. The day before as well, that's particularly kind, isn't
before.
It? So, can you watch these eight films?
Can you just, all the ones you've done, can you watch, here's 30 films, can you talk about them all?
Well, Marek, it won't have been for naught, because you can talk about them now.
Well, I thought, I am not going to throw my life away. Yeah, so I'm going to talk about these, I want to talk about two films.
Okay.
The first one is a film I never even heard of. It's called On the Beach.
Okay.
Which is the, for On the Beach title, you think, oh, you see, it may come out in 1959, it's got Gregory Peck in it, and...
Doesn't sound like a disaster film, I have to
like
say.
It sounds like a nice, happy holiday film.
It does.
It's not like that at all.
Tsunami, is it?
It is.
Sharknado?
A lot of these disaster films, I've watched a few films in between 1958 and 1960s.
Yeah.
And it was the whole first wave of nuclear fear. You know, the Cuban Missile Crisis was 1962.
Yes.
And so it spawned things like Doctor Strange stuff is one of them, I suppose. These films that are that was the disaster threat at the time.
Yeah.
Now it's become more sort of terrorism. Or plague diseases, something like that. So it's quite odd how that shifted into this from it being nuclear based. So this is an odd film.
Who's in it?
Gregory Peck.
Yeah.
So I've seen Gregory Peck in To Kill a Mockingbird and The Omen.
Yeah.
And I'm not seeing much else. He is fantastic. He's sort of got the. He just adds gravitas to a film like no one else. He is incredible. Imagine Cary Grant and replaced the. He was a less humorous leading man, I suppose.
Yeah.
And he is incredible. And Ava Gardner's in it, who plays his love interest. Fred Astaire. This is made in 1959. He just retired from. Stopped dancing, so acting. A brilliant performance.
Really?
Yeah. And Anthony Perkins before Psycho.
Wow.
And it's odd. You see Anthony Perkins in a black and white film, I can't escape that character.
That character
has tainted all of his work. So the story is, there's been a blooming nuclear war, of course.
Oh, no.
The Americans and the Russians have done it. And there's only
one... Who started it?
They never really say. So which is quite strange. It's not... Because a lot of these films were like
Russians.
It's never really said. So the only place left is Australia.
Right, that isn't contaminated.
And it's contaminated. And there's a cloud slowly moving towards Australia. So they know they're all going to die in 5 weeks.
Wow.
And that almost feels as if it's the pace of the film.
5 weeks.
It feels that there's this slow impending doom.
Yeah.
And what's fascinating about it, other than these major actors and their, it's almost the right. You feel as if they're all about to die. It feels like Ava Gardner is coming towards the end of her.
That's an odd concept for a disaster movie, though, isn't it? Because it's inevitable, and all quite calm until it happens, isn't it? Like, is it just about humans panicking, or
I don't know if it's a change in it sort of sums up what's changed in the last 50 years in terms of attitude, that I know it's fictional, but everyone's still wearing their ties and going out. They're all going out. Everyone's drinking a bit more.
Yeah.
No one's going mental.
Yeah.
Like now, you think you've got 5 weeks left. Everywhere it will be rioting.
Yeah, yeah.
Shit will be going down everywhere. Somehow they've maintained this order, and everyone's living this quite orderly life, which is probably wrong. But they're all just a bit like that sort of stiff upper lip thing.
Right.
Just facing this tragedy.
But it doesn't sound like they're acting like the rest of the world has been destroyed in the first place.
It feels as though there's an elephant in the room, that they're all... this is that, but there's this aura of melancholy, which is brilliant. And I think it's aided by the fact that Ava Gardner's sort of old. She's a Hollywood beauty who's at the latter end of her... She's getting older.
Yeah.
Fred Astaire's dance career's over. Now he's...
It's like a retirement home.
Yeah, but
the end of the world.
Their real lives almost sort of. The casting's great.
Yeah. Is it good though? Is it good? It sounds intriguing.
I just think it's incredible that Gregory Peck's a captain of a submarine, and he has to take him and Anthony Perkins have to go. They hear the distress signal in San Diego, and they go all the way from Australia to San Diego to find out what it was in San Francisco. And it's. As the main sort of part of the film, all it is, they eventually find it. This bloke goes on, anyway, as far as the sport is, but you probably won't watch anyway. Some bloke goes up inland to try and find the source of this distress signal. And all it is a Coke bottle has fallen into a blind, and it's just banging on the Morse code thing, random things. So they've travelled halfway. And it's quite incredible and they sort of wryly smile a bit. So it's just a slow ending, but because we're so used to this disaster films being a huge, fast,
or CGI thing. Like I'm trying to think of the names of them. What's that one? Something days. Late, no, what's it called?
Day After Tomorrow, wasn't it?
Day After Tomorrow, yeah.
Deep Impact, all these ones, yeah, Armageddon, yeah. Where it's all...
Even World War Z, to a certain extent. Yeah, it's all just CGI, everything falls apart, isn't it? It's
And there's something strange about this, how did you cope with it over a long period of time?
Yeah.
Which is more human in a way.
That's Threads we come back to as being, again, Nuclear Apocalypse, but that one felt so real as to really get under your skin of the that truth
is, that,
of
that
what
is
would
the
happen.
Best ever disaster film.
It is, yeah. I mean, the Poseidon Adventure is the one that everyone holds up, and it's the top of all of the lists if you Google, you know, best disaster movie of all time. And that's largely because of Gene Hackman's performance. But in terms of just being about the disaster itself, Threads, I think, wins. This film sounds interesting, though. It's like, different approach.
You watch it and you think it's really strange how you feel if watch your film at a totally different pace. And you see I haven't seen many of these great actors, you know. Mm. And Gregory Peck is. I remember thinking he was brilliant in To Kill a Mockingbird. He's just fantastic to watch, and no one really has this. Feel that he's got a real unique feel about him.
Yeah.
The way that someone like Anthony Hopkins has got a certain feel about him. And there's something also really haunting and alien about Anthony Perkins.
Yeah.
And he's incredible to watch. They're all... And Fred Astaire's got that look of someone tired and he's done his... And he's always talking about his career, you know, that's past. I thought it was really unique. I can't believe I've not heard of it before.
How many Marics would you give?
Between 6 and 7.
Okay.
I don't know if it's necessarily enjoyable, but it's fascinating in that this
almost is a window into that era.
It feels like some of these films you feel like you're watching a bit of history, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And the acting's great, and there's a lot of people looking into the distance, you know, with that Hollywood people being whimsical and looking that sort of look far away look.
Yeah, about yeah. Seven glassy eyed.
Yeah,
thing.
Yeah,
yeah.
And another one that was on the list I'd like to bring people's attention to.
Okay, so that was On the Beach, was it called?
The Bruce? On the Beach.
On the Beach.
This is one that's on it's on YouTube, I don't know if it's illegal or not. It's called The Day the Earth Caught Fire. I had never heard of it.
Is it the sequel to The Day the Earth Stood Still?
I don't think but that's a famous one. This is that came out in 1961.
Okay.
And it's set in London. What's great about these films is that we're obviously based in London, you can see how you're watching how much it's changed.
Yeah, yeah.
What's a great Hitchcock film, the murder one, when it's set where Covent Garden's in the market, the great I was talking about before.
M.
No.
Sorry, not M. I'm thinking of Dial M. I haven't seen many Hitchcocks, to be honest.
Anyway. This is set in 1961, and it's based around this journalist in Fleet Street who is called Peter Stenning, and he's a bit of an arsehole, he's a dick, and he's trying to get the latest scoop.
Right.
And the backstory is that the Russians and the Americans have been testing nuclear weapons, and suddenly all this fog appears, and the Earth starts getting hotter and hotter. What they've blooming done... They've only knocked the Earth off its blooming axis, haven't they?
The idiots.
So they knocked it by 11 degrees.
So it's closer to the sun, is it? What's going on?
It's gradually moving close to the sun. So these films are very similar. They're both...
Sort of inevitable Armageddon, slow-moving Armageddon.
And that totally changes the pace of the film.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like this impending doom. But again, it has a similar feel to On the Beach, which... was set in Australia. The only reason you knew the On the Beach was in Australia, I forgot to say this, was they kept on playing Waltzing Matilda constantly underneath. No one had an Australian
accent. They only had the rights to one song.
It was just Waltzing Matilda. This is quite a real, it just feels like a hot, it's set on this, I think it's a Daily Express, and it's all at the feature, people talking about the stories and them just doing everyone in their ties again, was just like getting sweatier and sweatier in each scene. Leo McKern, young Leo McKern's in it, younger Leo McKern.
Right.
And all these other sort of British actors. It really feels like you're watching sort of London and the whole... The effect of the war. And they've already been for the Second World War,
which is they've only gone and bloody knocked the earth off its axis.
Everyone's just, oh, well, let's just go on with it, shall we?
Yeah, yeah.
It's just another. What would
you do? Like, yes, there'd be plenty of rioting around, and you'd probably just want to survive as long as possible. But if the news just said, "That's it, you've got 3 weeks, and then the Earth's going to be gone."
Well, 3 weeks is—I think it's even worse. It's like 3 months. 3 weeks, you can just go right and go and do. It's just enough to do quite. 3 months is just that odd amount of time.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no point doing anything longer.
You'd almost want it to come sooner, about halfway through the second month. It's like, oh, get a move
when,
on.
I don't know how to pace this.
Yeah. It's just a little too long.
Yeah. If I've
said goodbye to everyone. I've barricaded the doors against, you know, looters.
It's sort of that awkward goodbye, isn't it? I might see. I don't want to get too emotional because I might see you again before we die.
Yeah.
Or when you're leaving a dinner party or something like that, you go and you say goodbye to people,
yeah.
And then you're waiting for some prick who's taking ages to say goodbye.
Have to loiter by the door, and then they just take so long. You feel like you have to say goodbye to people again because you've been there for it's the worst.
It seems really insincere the second time.
I'd rather the Earth just exploded and I didn't know it was coming. To be honest,
I think what we've learned from these films is it's a lot better if the end of the world is in two or 3 days. Don't wait.
Yeah. Have you seen The Knowing? Nicolas Cage film.
Yeah, it's awful.
Unexpected ending, though, I thought. I'm not going to spoil it.
It's total shit, I remember.
It is total shit, but I quite enjoy it.
If you want to watch a 60s disaster film from the point of view of a Fleet Street journalist, and you do miss that. I felt like I was... all the papers have moved now. Fleet Street's dead.
Yeah, yeah.
You get the idea of the press, this thing, you know...
There's a romantic sort of...
It feels like everyone's in the whole building working to do this newspaper, not the print rooms downstairs.
Yeah.
And the final shot, it says that, you know, they tried to put it back on the axis. And there's two different newspaper stories. And it says, the world is saved, the world has ended, you know, the world is doomed. Yeah. They're the two options.
And waiting to go to press.
Yeah.
It's a nice way of doing it.
You feel like you're watching history as well as watching... a film, which I think more and more we get, as you get older, you get more nostalgic about things.
Yeah.
I think, oh, that's how everyone spoke. You know, all the phrases like "come on, old chap" and all that.
Yeah,
you don't hear those things in film. And what, instead of swearing, they say "flocking" in this a couple of times. What's the flocking use of that? Which is
weird.
Flocking's a really good fake swear word.
Flocking.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Flocking is a thing as well.
What is it like?
Well, I don't know if it's got broader use, but there's a flocking machine I've had used before in a sketch show, which is used by the makeup department. And they apply glue to your face in the shape of a beard, and then use a flocking machine, which has tiny hairs in a like hopper on the back, and it blows them onto your face, but also statically charges them so they stick up.
Wow.
So when they hit your face, they're on end. So you can get a fake beard of hair that's actually sticking out from your face.
That's really good.
Flocking. Yeah.
So watch those two films that you probably would never have heard of. If you have heard of them, I'd be surprised. Anyway, that's what I've got to say about that.
All right. Well, that's good. Disaster movies generally, though. What's your favourite?
I think Threads is the best one.
Yeah. Children of Men, I think, is absolutely fantastic. I don't know if I'd call it a disaster film.
That's not on the list.
It's a post-apocalyptic or getting close to the apocalypse film. It's not a disaster film.
I watched it again recently, and it has become even more... Some films become less relevant.
Yeah.
Children of Men have become more relevant.
I love it. I think it's fantastic.
The whole migration thing, and it's like a sort of dark nativity play, isn't it?
Yeah, just the beautiful... It's a sci-fi. It's almost pure sci-fi. You know, the what-if scenario. What if... There are no children to live for anymore. How selfish do people become? And the answer is very, you know, it's brilliant.
And talking
brilliant
of Michael Caine,
yeah.
He is in The Day the Earth Caught Fire, 1961, playing a policeman who stops a barricade. He has three lines.
All right, mate.
Yeah, you can't, don't go down Chelsea Way. There's a bit of trouble down there. I can't do it. But it's so distinct. I thought, I look, you can't really see his face. And you can just, from those three lines,
yeah,
his voice is so distinct. I looked at him and went, oh, isn't it? So even though it is the end of the world, there's hope for bit part actors that they might get a bigger role. So
that's nice.
Happy ending.
Well, that's probably enough for this week. thank you for everyone who's emailed in. We are running out of emails, so if you would like to get in touch, then please do email us. The address is dearfilmfandango@gmail.com. Or if you'd like to share links you've found to things with others, then please go to our Facebook page, /filmfandango. Or you can tweet us at filmfandango, at Mr. David Reed, or at Merrick Larwood. And we do all of this for free, so if you would like to help us continue making it week in, week out, then please go to filmfandango.co.uk and press the donations button, and you can give us whatever you feel is necessary for this to continue going. We will be back next week. Keep watching the films.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.